And now both of them, of many of these bonds, and now both of them are in charge of figuring out how to get Puerto Rico out of the mess that they helped create. But the amazing thing is that one of them was appointed by the Democrats and the other was appointed by the Republicans. So it doesn't seem that both the Republicans in Congress and the Obama administration have no problem with the people who created the crisis now trying to figure out how to solve it.
That's exactly right. José Ramón González was and Carlos García at different times were the head of the Government Development Bank and also top executives, at other times top executives of Santander Securities responsible for issuing the bonds. And so, yes, that is exactly correct. When the debt became unsustainable in 2014.
We only have about 15 seconds to go. Go ahead.
In 2014 and 2015, and the Fiscal Control Board was appointed by the Obama administration of the seven political appointees. Those two executives were appointed to the Fiscal Control Board to determine what entities will be paid under the debt restructuring.
We want to thank you very much for being with us. Teresa Casitano, the Global Campaign's Organizing Coordinator with CWA. This is Democracy Now! Happy birthday to Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Well, it's wintertime here in our little mitten state, and you know what that means. It's time to get signed up for winter classes here at Henry Ford College. With top-shelf instructors and one of the lowest tuition rates in the state, Henry Ford College has been the benchmark for affordable, high-quality learning since 1938. HFC's winter semester starts January 9th, and online registration is going on right now. Visit hfcc.edu and see over 120 associate degree, career, and university transfer programs to choose from. HFC also has tuition and financial options available. So let's hit this info one more time. Online registration going on right now at hfcc.edu for the winter semester classes that begin January 9th. You've got a little time, but deadlines are closing in. So let's open up the door to your future with winter classes right here at the future-driven Henry Ford College.
This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. Live, it's our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. You know, it's new because it's not the same as last week. My name is Jay Koronick. Happy to be with you today. It is December the 16th, 2016, and my colleague John Conroy is with us, our WHFR News and Sports Director. So welcome, John.
Thank you, Jay. Great to be here.
Always glad to have you here. We're looking at a number of top stories that apply to Dearborn and the surrounding area, but I'd like to begin by saying I was talking to someone who actually listened to this show last week. I'm sure there's two or three of you out there. You're not alone if you're listening by yourself in some room somewhere in your car. You're not alone.
You're not alone.
I can almost guarantee that there's somebody else listening, at least one other person. And they had an interesting comment. They said, oh, so you're a Republican. You know, nobody, John, has said that to me ever in my entire life, 70-plus years. And I don't know. I didn't listen again to the show to see what I might have said. I don't know if it was implied that I sounded like a Republican all the way through. Now, I didn't take it as an insult because, and I just want to state this, as I do often several times a year, is that when we have opinions on this show, And, of course, any opinions expressed, John?
Are not necessarily the views and opinions of WHFR or HFC.
That's right. They don't tell us what to say. We thank them for a chance to speak our minds as fairly as we can. In regard to Jay Kornick's opinions, I have a real belief, and I know it's complex. And some people may even say it's a wrong way to solve problems. But I do believe that problems are not only many, but also varied. And they require a great variety of approaches to properly solve them and resolve them. And that means that the old-fashioned, I think it's very old-fashioned, it's very small-minded to think of either a conservative or a liberal approach to any problem, is probably, if it's exclusively conservative or liberal, is bound to fail. Any exclusively Tea Party approach, whatever the heck that is, mm-hmm. is doomed to fail for every problem. Okay, there's no made-up human philosophy that can actually solve problems that exist in the universe, in the real world, alone. It's going to take a combination of approaches after a lot of thought, after a lot of study, and it's very important for us to realize that most of the problems out there, they might have solutions or partial resolutions, but we cannot be locked into one way of thinking that might have worked for a previous problem that we encountered, but no longer will work on new problems. And simply put, there's more than two sides to every issue and more than two ways to solve every problem, but it's not in any sort of continuum or political spectrum. So sometimes I do believe I speak in regard to conservative type answers. Often I know libertarian answers, a lot of libertarian party philosophy I do support, but also I support a lot of progressive liberal philosophy. I will admit here, and I don't know if this stains me somehow, but I did support Bernie Sanders in the primary here in Michigan. I did believe, as he was talking about, a lot of changes needed in our political system, and I thought he had some answers that were worthy of a try, that hadn't been tried before. I do believe he understood what he was talking about, unlike certain other candidates. And of course, I do try to avoid, though, national issues, because we're supposed to be more or less a local news show, and that means Dearborn and the surrounding area. But there always are big issues. Global warming is a worldwide issue, yeah. The wars that our country are fighting, especially in the Middle East, have great impact, especially on the people who now currently live in Dearborn, their families, because 40% are Middle Eastern heritage here in Dearborn area right now. But servicemen from all over the country are still dying in our wars. The war in Afghanistan has now gone on longer than any other war the United States of America has ever been involved in. And that's really tragic. So in regard to that, okay, so I in other words, I don't want to sound one way or the other to you, because I don't think that my opinion is what you should believe. I'm trying to stimulate your thinking. But I do try to express a couple different points of view to challenge you too. At least I think I do that. Maybe, you know, it's only an hour show. How long can we go on here? But
well, that's what I want to say, Jay, too, is that regular listeners would hear much more than just one point of view from yourself. That's definitely true. So if you become a regular listener, then you'll know that there's lots of other ideas expressed by Jay.
Thank you. But also, I mean, I also realize that if you're not doctrinaire about things, if you don't have a single philosophy you apply to everything around you, that may seem somehow inconsistent or erratic. You know, you don't really know what you're talking about because all your solutions are not based on anything. Well, they're based on the problem itself, if you look closely at it. So I do believe the world is quite complex, and we need to look in great detail with an open mind, open ears, open heart to the situations so we find the best answers. It also means we need collaboration between people of different political philosophies. And as you know, in the last year, almost 8 years now, there's been great gridlock among our political leaders because they get very doctrinaire, very polarized. One goes to one end, the other goes to the other end. They won't talk to each other. They won't look at problems except in their own doctrinaire way. And even those in power, and this is the Michigan legislature for the last 7 years, Republicans are in charge of the legislature. Therefore, they have the committee chair people appointed that they want. And they don't allow discussion comments from the Democratic members. George Durrani, our 15th district representative, has mentioned that for the last 5 years to us on this show, that he had opinions, he wanted to make comments, he wanted to make suggestions to bills that were proposed in the committees he was in. They wouldn't even allow discussion. Mm-hmm. Nope, it's going to be our way, the way we wrote it. Mm-hmm. That's it. As if they know everything, you know. Huh. I mean, it's great to get your way, but did you ever suspect that maybe your way is not comprehensive enough? That maybe you are limited in your view of the world? I think all of us are. We should admit it. We should be aware of it. It's just not easy to go through life constantly trying to find the right answers from a variety of sources and do all that reading and research. It takes time. Now, speaking of research, I have to talk about the recount in Michigan. And that is because in getting ready for this show, and John and I both, we look at the local papers and their websites. That is the News Herald for Downriver, Dearborn Press and, Press and Guide here in Dearborn, and the Dearborn Times Herald. Also, the Arab American News.
Metro Times.
Right, Metro Times, which I've got right on my console right now. The headline story is just, it just makes me want to cry. But that's a different topic. Maybe we'll touch that later. Again, three or four really great articles in the Metro Times, the free newspaper. You can pick up many places in town. And I always recommend you get a copy of that. Not for the entertainment news necessarily, or the sex ads at the back. Well, those are sometimes pretty wild too. But the great investigative journal.
Really
yeah, the commentaries and the reporting.
Yep.
Even the commentary seemed like they were done by reporters who did some research. You know, they're not just, hey, here's my opinion. I don't know why it's true. I just, you know, they give you their ideas. Okay, here's the recount story, as best I understand it. Briefly summed up, and this is, I have to bring this up because people who are commenting on the News Herald website to stories and opinions, as well as Press and Guide, apparently, a lot of people don't keep up with the details of the news. The recount in Michigan was stopped by the Michigan Supreme Court, on which, of course, the Supreme Court judges get elected only thanks to money from the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. They get the campaigns, they get the money, the advertising, and so guess what? Those judges who were chosen for that distinguished honor of funding and support will pretty much follow the party line. Whatever the Democratic Party, Republican Party of Michigan wants them to do, which would be best for that political party, they will make a judgment that way. Well, shouldn't they look at the law itself and interpret the law fairly? No, it doesn't work that way. The reality is, especially in Michigan, there's heavy-duty politics involved. So when the vote came in the Michigan Supreme Court to stop the recount in Michigan, it's true. At the point they stopped it, there was only like 300 more votes for Hillary Clinton. And so Trump still had about 10,000 lead out of 4 million votes. Well, the vote at the Michigan Supreme Court went down by party lines. It was split, I think 5-2, because there's 5 Republicans and 2 Democrats there on the Michigan Supreme Court. So that should tell you something right there. It was a decision made because just the Republicans didn't want, well, Trump to lose. Mm-hmm. It's just that simple. Don't take a chance and just say, well, make up a reason like, oh, it's going to cost the taxpayers money and take up the time of our elected officials and... And Jill Stein, who started the idea of the Green Party candidate, she was going to lose anyway. So, but that's an excuse that the Supreme Court made up. A recount is a recount, folks. It's already in the rules in the Constitution of Michigan. If somebody wants a recount who ran for office, there is that qualification. Mm-hmm. You have to be somebody that ran for that office. And they put up the money you say it's going to cost. And in fact, that amount went up even higher in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, and in Michigan stayed the same. But Jill Stein was going to pay exactly what was previously stated this is going to cost you if you want a recount.
Yeah.
And by golly, so I totally disagree with the Michigan Supreme Court, who was primarily Republican, right? So I'm not Republican on this one, folks. You know, the recount should have gone ahead, especially because, and do I have to play the 13-minute segment from Michigan Public Radio that was released yesterday? They discovered 75,000 votes in Detroit that hadn't been counted yet. And they never got counted because the recount didn't continue. Now, we know Detroit, the usual voting there by parties is 80% Democrat. So 80% of 75,000, well, that would have, if that would have gone to Hillary, that would have given Hillary a 40,000 vote lead in Michigan, and she would have won the state. So I'm just saying, in terms of recounts, I think I'm just basically Democratic. In a way, I'd like to see a recount all the time. In the several places there have been recounts, there's always been a difference at the end. Now, in some cases, not enough to cause a change in the outcome. But every recount I've read about across the whole country, there's a different number. Every time they recount it, there's a different number. How does that happen, you ask? And then what about these 75,000 lost ballots? Now, so what I will play here is two things from Jack Lessenberry. So that, not 13 minutes, but together it'll take 5 minutes. He had an opinion. The first one is what we learned from the recount in Michigan. But the second one, something good came from Michigan's recount. So I want you to listen to this and understand it and realize that if voting is important, and yes, it is, how else are we going to choose the right candidates or the best candidates or the public's choice for candidates? Then the counting has to be completely fair and open. And if there needs to be a recount, if somebody wants one and they're willing to pay the fee that was agreed to before, that was set in writing, then it should be allowed to happen all the way through to the end. You know, all the reports say if the U.S. Supreme Court, mostly Republican appointees back in the year 2000, would have let the Florida recount go ahead, then, and remember, even without that recount, Al Gore would have won by about 500 votes in the whole country, won by 500 votes. But he would have won the popular vote, which in every other country of the world is just called the vote.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's the numbers when they add up. That's the vote. Anyway, it looked like it would have changed the whole balance down there in Florida. And George W. Bush wouldn't. And what was the excuse of the U.S. Supreme Court? Oh, we've waited long enough. People want to know who the winner is, and so we don't want to have another recount go ahead. What kind of response from the U.S. Supreme Court, educated people, is that? We've waited long enough? It was actually December 13th, so it was only 3.5 weeks after the November 8th election in the year 2000 when Al Gore, after this ruling, said, I concede.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think he shouldn't have because it was, but how can you go against the U.S. Supreme Court? That's kind of the final decision, unless you can find some, I don't know, corruption or something else that we can bring up the case again from a different point of view. Anyway, okay, so listen to these and then we'll move on here. But this is local news because it's about democracy, and it's also because so many people around here don't seem to understand what the recount meant and what changes we can make to make elections more fair in the future, because we don't have anything else, folks, other than resorting to a tyrant who just appoints his family to or a monarchy or something, given permission by God to rule over your country. I mean, democracy is it, and we do it by voting. So the votes got to be counted accurately, and we can't lose any. Okay, here we go. Listen to these, and we'll be back. But don't tune out here. Listen closely to Lessenberry. Again, the first one is from 2 days ago, and the last one is from just yesterday.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. I've been wrong about a number of things this year.
I didn't expect Donald Trump to win the presidential election, but then again, almost nobody did. More recently, I didn't think there'd be anything startling if there was a statewide recount of Michigan's votes. I was partly right about that. They did manage to recount a little more than 40% of the vote before the recount was stopped. When they did, Hillary Clinton had gained a net of 102 votes statewide. It was clear there was no way she was going to gain enough to overcome Trump's nearly 11,000 vote margin. In Wisconsin, where the recount was nearly finished as of this morning, she had gained a grand total of 25 votes statewide out of nearly 3 million counted. But we did learn something highly disturbing. In many places, the vote retrieval and storage systems were a mess. This was especially true in Detroit, where in more than half the precincts, the number of votes turned in did not match the number of voters listed. This led a Republican poll watcher, who is a friend of mine, to speculate that votes had been run through the counting system more than once. What apparently happened instead was that they were tossed into a plastic tub, carelessly and illegally. Republicans were oddly desperate to stop the recount, and they eventually prevailed after a Michigan Supreme Court decision in which the justices voted along party lines. But while I thought the recount itself was unnecessary in the first place, I was convinced that completing it as far as possible was essential after the problems started showing up. Not because there was the slightest chance the outcome would change, but we owe it to all the citizens to find out everything that's wrong so we can fix it. Some of this may be the fault of local clerks and elections officials, and a thorough investigation is needed. I would think that the jobs of those responsible in Detroit and Wayne County ought to be in jeopardy, and are. In a democracy, nothing is as sacred as the integrity of the ballot. Yet some of this may also be the fault of statewide officials. It's been well documented that Detroit precincts often don't have as many voting stations as they need, and that equipment is also often inferior and subject to breakdowns. This amounts to a form of voter suppression when people cannot wait in line for long periods of time. The Michigan legislature has been adamantly opposed to making it easier for people to vote. This is morally wrong, and we should make further efforts to call them on it. Lastly, we should not assume those are only so-called inner-city problems. Many voters' faith in democracy has been shaken by the fact they're about to have a president who lost a popular count by nearly 3 million votes. The last thing we need is anything that further casts doubt on the integrity of our elections.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
Well, regardless of your politics, you can't say nothing good came out of the aborted Michigan recount. Chris Thomas, the state's longtime elections director, said last night that Detroit will get new voting machines before the city elections next year. Earlier, Janice Winfrey, Motown's much-criticized city clerk, told the Detroit Free Press's Rochelle Riley that she hoped new machines were coming, but if not, quote, "we're going to do like we always do in this raggedy city. We're going to make it work." You have to admire her spirit. Unfortunately, things didn't work very well in last month's presidential election, in which ballots were improperly handled, containers not properly sealed, and voting lists often inaccurate. This wasn't primarily an equipment problem, but a personnel one. Chris Thomas told the newspaper he would go to Detroit to try and help Winfrey figure out how to do the job better. He suspects the blame largely falls with the mainly elderly precinct inspectors and either their training or their ability to handle the job. Speaking of ability to handle a job, things seem to be moving at a remarkable pace over in Lansing, where the lame duck legislature has been flapping its wings. I hadn't really expected a lot out of this lame duck session, in part because there'll be no change in the partisan composition of the legislature next year. But our often languid lawmakers do seem determined to get as much done as possible. I can happily report that both houses have now outlawed the outdated and barbaric practice of seclusion and restraint that some schools were still using, even with autistic children. The governor is expected to sign these bills, and Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly deserves thanks for pushing to make this happen. Yesterday, I reported that a major attempt was being made to mess with the state's auto insurance system in an effort to deny uninsured motorists full compensation if they're terribly injured. Well, that's apparently collapsed of its own weight, and perhaps because too many people became aware of what was going on. Now it appears that the legislature is instead making one last effort to solve a problem they've wrestled with for months, energy legislation. The sticking point has had to do with how prices are set for alternative energy and the proper relationship and balance between alternative sources and conventional utilities. Actually, the mechanics are much more complex than that. Given that we're about to have an administration in Washington that seems to favor burning soft coal without scrubbers anywhere, so long as it creates jobs, it'll be interesting to see what Lansing does. Many of the bills now being passed, you may never hear of. I can tell you that cities will now find it easier to win lawsuits if people trip on cracks in the sidewalks, as long as there was an open and obvious danger apparent to any thinking pedestrian. That is, as long as the governor signs it. And you will also now be able to pick wild morel mushrooms without having every one of them inspected by an approved mushroom identification expert. Which makes me have to say, is this a great state or what?
This is the new WHFR Journal, and it's Friday, December 16th, 2016. 9 days till Christmas? Do I have to say that, John? I hope not. Okay, because it's pretty hectic out there, but it certainly looks like Christmas and more snow coming this weekend. Although we never should give the weather report, because if people are listening to our podcast of the show, available anytime after broadcast from our website, whfr.fm, the weather could have changed. Maybe it's all melted. Maybe everything is nice and clean and dry again. Ha ha.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, I wanted to follow up on the lame duck session. I did have a call into George Durrani's office yesterday, but they were still in session until late yesterday, I think. And so he's not available today to be on the show. And I invited him for next week. But, you know, the 23rd, I said, you know, if he wants to come back home and be with home and be with family, or, you know, get ready for the holidays, it's just a day before New Year's Eve days, for Pete's sake. So I said maybe January would be better. So we're going to have George on here because it's the end of his 6 years serving our city, primarily the 15th district goes just a little bit beyond Dearborn, and of course when he's not in office anymore, what might he say about those 6 years? And he's not running for another office that we know of immediately, so he can give us, I think, a very honest reflection on what happened and maybe why. And so we're looking forward to that. And I don't, yes, he's a Democrat, but I don't think, I think once you're out of office and you're over and done with it and you can't run again for that same office, I think there's an amazing amount of honesty that that comes up. Okay, I got this, and it's so this is slanted, but from the American Federation of Teachers in Michigan, that's affiliated with the AFL-CIO, the union, which I'm a proud member of, yes, and so are you know, both the full-time and the part-time teachers here at Henry Ford College are members of their own unions, so own part, there's it's called adjunct faculty union, teacher union, and also the full-time teachers union, two different chapters, different locals, as they're called. They're very active in Lansing, and they've been following the lame duck session, and they send reports to the people in their group. And this is from yesterday evening at 7 p.m. The report is, dear sisters and brothers, the Michigan legislature adjourned for the year without passing any of the legislation that would have deeply harmed our students, our schools, our members, and our union. So that's good news. Mm-hmm. From their point of view, of course, but attacks on public employee pensions, school funding, collective bargaining, worker voice, release time for labor management collaboration, and our members' ability to pay union dues did not earn the support of a majority of the legislature. And that's because, they say, of the dedication of our members and the strength of our union. In fact, union members sent 22,292 emails to 146 state legislators because they did ask the people to send an email to send a copy to the AFT just to see who was sending what. And that's just, you say, well, then they influence a legislature one way. Apparently, because things did go the way they wanted. But guess what, folks? Anybody can send an email. Okay, you let those legislators know what you believe, what you think. I know it takes time. I know it takes reading. There's no issue that's very simple. But let them know how you feel, and you can make a difference. Now, maybe the legislators would have voted the same way without that. But there was also, by the way, 4,000 phone calls from AFT members over the last couple of weeks. Letters to the editor and local papers. I saw the comment. There is a school teacher in Wyandotte who regularly writes in the opinion in the News Herald,
right.
And of course she's harshly criticized by other readers of the News Herald for being a teacher. what does a teacher know about education? Yeah, well, right. No, I didn't say that because that'd be stupid. Obviously, teachers know a lot because they're right there on the firing line, if you will.
First line of defense, so to speak.
Yeah, I was saying firing line may be the wrong, unless the kids are carrying guns, that's probably not the, or the teachers are carrying guns. Anyway, and of course, there have been dozens of meetings with legislators, and more than 40 retirees came to Lansing to directly lobby. Because if you're not working full time, maybe you have time to go up there. I did not. I'm sorry. I was prepping for this show, so that's my excuse. A couple things did pass. Several pro-public education and pro-labor bills did pass, and a couple they thought were good. They passed a repeal of the strict zero-tolerance laws that were applied discriminatorily and which fueled the school-to-prison pipeline. In other words, if a student had any sort of violation of rules, they were completely kicked out forever of school. So what you going to do? Become a criminal? I mean, where are you going to go to school? I mean, I don't know if they could have signed up at a private school, if they could have afforded that. But, so, you know, you have to, as is true in our court system, you have to match the punishment to the crime and to the situation. You know, what about a previous record of bad behavior? You know, was this partially accidental, or was undue pressure from outside, or had they eaten too many Twinkies, or that was actual defense.
Twinkies, yeah.
And it was called the Twinkie defense for somebody that killed somebody in Florida. It was a famous case, too. I don't remember who it was now, but it doesn't matter. The person got off with only manslaughter instead of homicide. Why? Because he was proven to be a junk food addict.
Addict.
Yes. In other words, he ate high sugary stuff all the time, including Twinkies, I guess. So, but junk food addict is not easy to say, but the Twinkie defense, that's a lot more fun. So, but that's, I don't think that's good. But no, my point is that the situation does matter every time. That's why we have a judge and why we have a jury. They don't just say, like the length of time in prison or the amount of money, but they actually assess the situation when it comes time to punishment. Okay, they actually, and often the jury just says, yeah, we find him guilty, but the judge has to find in his own ruling, he has in his own mind to find the fairest approach for punishing or reforming or doing restitution, if it's possible, right. to the people that were injured or harmed. So that's good. So they got rid of the zero tolerance laws, strict zero tolerance laws in schools. Secondly, a bill was passed to provide reforms to the Michigan Unemployment Insurance Agency, which will prevent repetition of, and I hadn't heard about this, the robo-fraud abuses, where people were convicted of fraud, denied necessary earned benefits, and saddled with exorbitant and unjust fines by a computer. A computer did that. So watch out, computer. Here comes the Michigan legislature. What did they know about computers? But whatever they did, and by the way, the article has the word prevent misspelled and the word repetition misspelled, but obviously it was a human that did that because a robot would never do that.
Spell check wouldn't do that.
I have a comment if we have time at the end of the hour, or I may save it till next week. Who knows? In the holiday spirit, a comment about computers in our society. Look forward to that one, folks. I've just read several books on the topic. Ha ha, boy. He could be dangerous, that Koronek, if he reads any more. My
Watch
gosh.
Out for readers.
Yeah. Okay. So we will find out more, but the lame duck session is over. You can follow other news reports. I always recommend michiganradio.org. They're on the internet, and their podcasts and their shows are all available. Their talk shows are all available from that website. I subscribe to the Jack Lessenberry podcast from the iTunes store, so I get them automatically sent to me anyway because I always want to see what he has to say. Okay, moving on, though. It's past 1:30, 1:33, so more than half the show is gone today. A few more topics here. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, okay, this follows up. I'm sorry. Here we go national again. But Monday, December 19th, is when the Electoral College will meet. When the electors, who are sent from each state, get together and decide who's going to be the next president. According to the Constitution, they are supposed to decide it among themselves, not based exclusively or only, and maybe not at all, not based on the vote in the state. And why was that done? It was done, Alexander Hamilton, very popular musical, which I didn't go into detail on this, but he felt as a danger with an uneducated populace and a popular vote for president is that there could be a demagogue, that is a big-mouthed, wild and crazy person saying things that appealed to the crowd, but in which he had no or she had no belief in, could sway that vote. So was this person really a good person? Were they a trustworthy, honest, intelligent person? The Electoral College, because they're representatives chosen by the state, supposedly people very distinguished, very knowledgeable themselves, they would go and they would understand how the popular vote went in their state, but they would be free to vote for whomever they wanted, even if it wasn't somebody on a ballot. So whomever they wanted. And if nobody got the majority in the Electoral College, it would go into the House of Representatives. Now, there's no doubt that if Electoral College, if only 37 people who are Republican don't vote for Donald Trump on Monday in the Electoral College, and it's a wild outside chance that that would be the case, but they have the legal right. I know a couple states have passed laws saying you as an elector must vote for who we tell you to vote for. Mm-hmm. But the Constitution of the United States doesn't say that.
No.
Constitution of the United States is what tells what states what the Electoral College is. It's a national election, not a state election. So there's a real question, you know, what goes on there. In fact, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, before he became our president in 1960, he wrote a book called Profiles in Courage. Mm-hmm. And it was a number of chapters that talked about individual politicians who voted and acted their conscience, which was extremely brave because in every situation, every one of like a dozen or more chapters, the rest of their lives were disastrously bad because of that decision they made. They were punished, they were tortured, they were defiled, but they kind of knew it was coming, but they did it anyway because they did what was right. To quote Ted Cruz, they voted their conscience. And I think he would have approved of that, even though finally he decided to side with Trump at the last minute. Okay, so Michael Moore went on CNN, and this is on the Metro Times website today. They have a link to the discussion. No, MSNBC, excuse me. Lawrence O'Donnell showed the last word in the last day, and he's of course asking for a number of reasons that the Republican electors consider voting for anyone. He said doesn't have to be Hillary Clinton, but just vote for anyone other than Donald Trump. Now he realizes that if they don't get a majority and for Trump there, it's going to go to the U.S. House of Representatives, and that's you know the U.S. Congress in Washington D.C. Majority of them are Republican. So if they all follow the party line there, then Donald Trump will be elected in the House of Representatives. Still, maybe there is a better candidate out there. I hope the people who are representing Michigan will also vote their conscience. You have to figure that out for yourself. You have to look at the campaign, look at what was said. Maybe you look at the president-elect's appointees for his cabinet and how many times he's stated to the public in speeches in the last 2 weeks about things that he said in the campaign that he didn't believe in, that he didn't really think were true, but they really sold well with the audience. They played well with the audience, but he admitted he didn't believe in them. And because of his appointments, we know he didn't believe in a lot of the things he said. Of course, those appointments may not happen the way he asked for. Congress has to approve them, but oh, my goodness. So Michael Moore is begging, in fact, the Electoral College to vote for anyone but Trump. And that is Monday, so it's something to look at. But the odds are it's, you know, that wouldn't happen because of the punishment that might result, the social admonishment of various kinds that will result on those particular electors. But John Fitzgerald Kennedy believed in that kind of bravery and courage. So, by the way, I want to commend Michael Moore on the major interview shows I've seen him on in the last couple of weeks, both late night shows and other, you know, cable network shows. He's not wearing his baseball caps anymore. The good news is some people thought he was bald. That's why he was covering up. No, he's got a big full head of hair, although maybe he bought a wig or something, and he's been combing it, and he almost looks respectable.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, I think the baseball cap thing was really a disadvantage for him in terms of image. When they're doing those tight close-ups on TV, you know, you couldn't even see his eyes necessarily because the brim was cutting off some of the light, studio lights, and made him look a little bit not only disheveled but also suspicious. And he is from Michigan. That's another reason I mentioned that. And yes, you might say he's a liberal gadfly, but he knows a lot. He's a very fair person, actually. You have to be fair if you're a Democrat living in Traverse City, as he is. Always outspoken, but that's good. So I guess I'm not Republican on that issue either, John,
no.
Right? Okay,
no.
Check that off.
All check right. That one.
You have something you want to toss in, something lighter? Maybe there's some happy event coming up downriver?
Yeah.
Or in Dearborn? We do know here about the Michigan Brass people. You have that?
I do.
Okay. We're turning pages rapidly. Okay, we found
okay,
it.
Yes. Very big event this Sunday. The Motor City Brass Band will bring holiday cheer to the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center with its Sounds of the Season concert at 3 p.m. December 18th. This band is made up of volunteer musicians, presents a Michigan twist on the British brass band tradition. With elaborate staging and engaging antics, the annual holiday program embodies the band's slogan, "It's more than a concert, it's a show." There will also be there's a partnership with the Dearborn Schools Elementary and Secondary Honors Choirs to commemorate its long-standing relationship with the Dearborn community. Students will share the stage with band members to perform holiday favorites such as 12 Days of Christmas and O Holy Night and Carol of the Bells. It should be a great show, and single tickets for Sounds of the Season are $14 for adults and $12 for senior citizens. Come to the box office or call 313-943-2354 or at DearbornTheater.com.
And there's a lot of special holiday events that are going on still. Most of the trees have been lit. There is a production that is going to be, tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday at the Playhouse in Wyandotte. It's called Home for the Holidays. They're going to be at the Catherine A. Daly Theater on the Avenue with favorite holiday songs from the 1940s to the present day. And
this is actually
it's
in
a
Wyandotte.
Musical. Yes. Yes, I think I said that. Didn't I say it? It's Biddle Avenue in Wyandotte.
Yep, right. Biddle Avenue in Wyandotte.
And it's going to be 7:30 p.m. tonight and tomorrow night, and 3 p.m. A little conflict there with the Motor City Brass. Oh, my goodness. at the Playhouse. Singer Elaine Lukowski said the show has something for everyone and will draw families closer together. So music is always a wonderful thing around this time of year, and experience it live. WHFR always recommends attending live music, either by individual artists or these concerts, because it's a great social experience as well as the music sounds so much better when it's performed directly in front of you, I think, anyway. They talk about stereo. That's only two channels.
Yeah.
You know, when it's live in front of you, it is 360-degree sound. Ooh. It's coming from front and back and sides and top and bottom. And oh, my goodness. It's just wonderful.
Speaking of holiday cheer, on Grosse Isle, we have a very fine place called the Customs House that is, this is the last weekend that it'll be open, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's holiday gift giving at its best because the local artists as well as local folks who just like to put clothes together will be selling their wares, scarves and hand gloves, and also hats and individual bracelets that are that people put together on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also always good libations there, hot chocolate and coffee and that type of thing. And there's three floors of stuff to look at on the, in this customs house. Only open again. This is the last weekend that you'll have a chance to shop
right.
there. So
right. yep.
take advantage of that and Thursday good. And Friday and Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. Just like to follow up, I found three more little bills that have been passed during the lame duck session in Lansing, and they all have impact one way or the other on our local area. Just was in the News Herald. It must have just happened yesterday. But a Democrat actually got his first bill passed. So that's a first, because Republicans wouldn't usually vote for anything that's sponsored by a Democrat, but it was a bipartisan vote, and it was part of a nine-bill package. I don't know what the other ones are, but it outlines when seclusion and restraint may be properly used in schools and who can perform the procedures. Seclusion and restraint. Seclusion would mean putting somebody in a closet, wasn't it? I don't know. And restraint, that would be tying them up. And I'm generalizing here and popularizing. But the bipartisan legislation will increase penalties also for assaulting an individual with a developmental disability, mental illness, or cognitive impairment. And that may not just be in the schools. So that's a harsher punishment. I don't know what it was before. Why wouldn't it be a harsh punishment before? But certainly beating up somebody that has no defense. What's the punishment for beating up seniors? Is that, or you have to be mentally disabled in order to qualify for, because a lot of seniors are not too strong or healthy, or you know, they haven't taken Taekwondo or something recently, so that's kind of unfair too. So, but again, that's something usually judges, they will have a spectrum of punishments available to them. So if they see the situation is especially horrendous or cruel, they could go to the maximum fine or time in jail, I guess. But congratulations to Frank Liberati, state representative from Allen Park, he actually got a bill passed. So good. One bill out of nine, anyway. House votes to raise speed limits, and that'll probably, I don't know if that passed, but the House voted there. So, and it passed 28-8 in the Senate. So we'll see whether or not Governor Snyder will sign that. So rural freeways, that's not Detroit area, but they're going to increase the speed from 70 to 75. But general speed limits elsewhere would be 70 on other freeways, so and 65 on state trunk with state trunk line highways. So, but it's about a 5 mile per hour increase different places, but not too many of the roads around Detroit. That was supported by Democrats and Republicans. A lot of Democrats, including David Kinesick from Dearborn Heights, voted for that one, and Coleman Young Jr. of Detroit voted for raising the speed limits. Also voting to reduce punishment for minors in possession of, doesn't say what, in possession of something, probably drugs, would be my guess. Okay. Oh, here's a big important bill. Authorize hunter's pink alongside hunter's orange for safety. So when you go out hunting, hunter's orange isn't your own style choice.
You have more to choose from.
Right. Because... Yep. To be very sexist about it, the bill would also permit hunter's pink.
There you go.
So for the women or the men that won't wear hunter's orange, you've got hunter's pink.
Wonder how the deer will react to that, Jay.
Well, I would think they would run from even hunter's orange by past experience
yeah.
here. Reduce minor in possession of alcohol sanctions. Oh, okay. So if you're found... if you're a minor and you're found with alcohol, then they're going to remove the misdemeanor penalties for the first violation, but not the second or third, which carry a potential 30 and 60-day sentence. So go out and have a brewski, young kids. No, that's crazy. It's just crazy. So I'm not sure why they did that. But anyway, because there's not much punishment on the books, then why wouldn't you try it?
Why wouldn't you go?
No, I mean, geez. I mean, if everybody else is doing it, you know, because alcohol is legal for all, and a lot of adults, drinky. Careful this holiday season, folks. If you do imbibe, then don't drive, okay? Lock yourself up somewhere. And there was a House bill passed 57-50 in the House, required voters with no ID to prove their identity within 10 days. That would also hurt voter turnout, by the way, and we're not sure that passed the Senate. We'll get the full story maybe next week, and certainly from George Durrani when he gets here maybe in the new year. Here's one. I'd like John's opinion on this since he worked for an auto manufacturer. Governor Rick Snyder has now signed a law from the lame duck session allowing self-driving cars on Michigan roadways.
Yeah, we're going to see them pretty often, pretty soon, actually.
I don't really want to share the highway with a self-driving car. I don't trust them. The governor signed this bill in Dearborn on December 9th, okay. So before last week's show. I didn't get it in. The governor was flanked here in Dearborn by a Ford Model T on one side and a self-driving Ford Fusion on the other side. So that's because the cars were forcing him to sign this.
They collaborated.
Yeah. You either sign this for our friends in the autonomous cars or we'll run you over. I don't know. It's those books I read about computers in the future, getting a little sci-fi about this. Anyway, he signed the legislation at the Automotive Hall of Fame here in Dearborn, which, of course, is moving. They're closing. They're getting out of here. So I don't know what that says about the bill. But it's a bill to regulate autonomous vehicles while putting Michigan at the forefront of the developing technology. And there was a statement from, by the way, seven other states have passed similar legislation requiring self-driving cars. And it clears the way for the public to use self-driving cars when they are available. So it won't be illegal to flip the switch on your Tesla or anything else that's got some self-driving attributes. It's just totally not right yet. That's my opinion. But, of course, technology is improving so fast that maybe it won't be too bad. There was a statement, and I see it's not in this article. Oh, my gosh. From Mary Barra, who's the CEO of General Motors. Mm-hmm. And she said, yep, we're going to develop the Chevy Bolt, which is their all-electric car, to be completely self-driving. And we're going to be testing it on the roads in Michigan in the winter, because that's going to be the real test. You know, when the roads are slick and the car starts sliding right and left, how will the autonomous driver figure out what's going on? And when they spin around in a circle, will the GPS really let them know which way is the right way to drive after that? A simple enough problem, you might say. And I think, well, the Chevy Bolt, that's a rear-wheel drive car. Mm-hmm. You know, in Michigan in the winter, whether you're human or a computer, out of the three choices, rear-wheel drive, front-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive is the most challenging, the most difficult to drive in icy, snowy weather. And so it will be a real challenge with the Chevy Bolt, certainly, to keep going straight.
We'll see if GM can improve its frosty relationship with its customers.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, also, it was just saw a picture in the paper of Mary Barra and the female counterpart from the UAW shaking hands to get ready for their negotiations coming up. It's pretty rare that two women have been in charge of the negotiations.
But will they shake hands after the negotiations?
Yeah, we hope so.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. Yeah, they'll be happy certainly to get out of there. And by the way, the Bolt, which is their all-electric small car, is already selling, but it's in California because, and it's a word I don't know, I always forget, but it's a compliance car. And California absolutely is in the forefront of clean energy and requiring a lot of hybrids and electric cars because they're better for the environment. And even Ford is selling most of their electric cars, all electric cars, their energy models in California because they're required to have a high percentage of them out of all that are sold by that company in California. And so we won't see very many of them because they don't make very many. Also, it's been announced that GM is losing $9,000 per car on every Bolt. that they sell at retail price because the batteries cost them so much. And so they just, you know, but they needed the compliance car to sell any cars in California, just like Ford needed the electric Focus, the completely electric Focus, in order to sell any cars at all in California. And I say, and this is not Republican, good for California. I mean, their government is standing behind a cleaner environment and a better energy future for all of us, a more sustainable future. You know, not just really great until all the gas is gone, all the oil is gone. We'll have a great time for 3 more years, and then the hell with the kids, you know. The environment will be dirty, the food will be dirty, the water will be dirty, and we'll have no gas and no transportation until we can figure out how to build electric cars. Well, we need to figure that out now. So I think government has to push in the direction that is good for all of us and for the planet, too. I don't trust an autonomous car. I would never have an autonomous car. If you want an autonomous transportation, there's such things as commuter trains.
Yes.
Buses driven by professionals.
Subways.
And subways, which is probably too late to put in Michigan.
Yep.
But, I mean, if you don't want to drive, we've already got the answers. You don't have to have all the computers and all the engineering and all the safety problems of autonomous vehicles. It's just crazy to me. It's absolutely insane. And Google has spun off its autonomous car division. So it won't be called a Google car. It'll be called a Waymo.
Waymo, yep.
I always think of Waymo, which was a company that made frisbees,
that's right.
And other things that went wham, you know. I don't. So that I think is a bad name for a car. It's a whammo. Smash into something really quick. Let's go whammo that car into the telephone post. Oh my goodness, it's sad. Okay,
let me give a quick.
John? We only have 5 minutes.
Yeah, quick sports update for WHFR listeners and Henry Ford College. Our basketball team, the men's basketball team, is playing tomorrow away at Kalamazoo Community College. We had a game last night also that we were not victorious, but we'd won the previous three games. And our next home game is the 21st, this coming Wednesday at 7 p.m. I'd like everybody to come out and root on and go Hawks.
Yeah, it's on the main campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. A couple bucks at the door for admission, right? Four or five?
Yep. For students, no charge. But
okay,
I think
great.
It's $5 mm-hmm. admission for
yeah.
others.
And it's great entertainment, and it's next Wednesday?
Right? Next Wednesday night, 7
okay.
o'clock.
So that's happening on this campus, even though the campus will be the classes end. Well, the exams technically end Sunday, but most of them will be over today. And the teacher grades, and I know about this specifically myself, are due Monday at 6 p.m. There's always a big hassle by the teachers to get the grades calculated and in. But after that, the school is still going to be open through Thursday, the 22nd, but it's going to be closed on the 23rd. Enrollment for the winter semester that we told you about the start of the hour, it will still go on online once you're admitted. So you have to be admitted, and that means you have to make a trip to the college in person to the Welcome Center, the north side. It's a building on the north side of our Evergreen campus, 5101 Evergreen, the Welcome Center, and just ID. And so if you've never been here before, you need to go through the admission process. And it'll only take maybe half hour to an hour to do that. And then if you don't want to register while you're there, although that would seem to be crazy since they have all the computer terminals up and running and ready to go, you might as well get your classes as long as you came to the building. But you could go back home and then register whenever you wanted to, but you got to be admitted first. And if you haven't been admitted before, you need to come on campus and do that. The college will reopen in January 3rd, somebody said. I think that's a Tuesday. Yes.
Yep. Saturday, yeah. That's
mm-hmm.
true.
Okay. So we're going to be, of course, broadcasting a lot of special shows here at WHFR, especially on the 24th and 25th of this month. Our staff have recorded a lot of one-hour-long shows. I mean, a dozen and a half we have, and we're going to rotate them so that we don't have to be here on that Saturday and Sunday. Next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we're going to bump all of our regular programming, including classical music, overnight. So get ready, classical music lovers. It won't be there on that night, but our special one-hour shows will, and there'll be just a wide, wide variety of music for the season, for all the various holidays that we're celebrating, including, and this will happen before next Friday, so have to say it right now, happy birthday, WHFR. Next Tuesday, the 20th, you are going to be 31. And it'll begin our 32nd year of broadcasting next Tuesday. Many people said it couldn't be done. Turn, just as a final note, and it's going to be kind of sad, I guess, or final note for me anyway. Maybe John has something happy to mention finally. But the Detroit Metro Times issue that I was so upset about, it's a major investigative story. And I think it's very good, even though you might say, oh, it's a very small little issue. But the question is, as they put in red on the front cover, why are Detroit cops killing so many dogs? It seems that, and there's one officer that's got on his record, he's killed 67 dogs.
Wow.
And it seems that they're not being properly trained as to dog behavior. You know, when is a dog like really vicious or crazy? I think you should look for some foam around the mouth if it's rabies. But it seems they're just pulling their guns and shooting dogs. And he said, well, that's crazy. Well, read the 4,000-plus word article in the Metro Times. And, I mean, often, you know, we talk about a lot of different categories of human beings who are not being treated fairly in our criminal justice system. And some people think, well, that's just, they're just complaining about nothing. But here is actual documentary evidence from animals that can't complain for themselves. Or if they do complain, they're going to be shot. I hate to put it that way, but what would a Republican say about that? What would a Republican say about that? What would Jesus say? That's what I also bring it up at this time of the year. Okay, well, John, you've got to have something happy to conclude with here other than your best holiday wishes.
Well, yes, I do have very good holiday wishes to send out to all of our listeners. We do have... On Saturday, we have Benny from Benny and the Jets playing at Smokies on the River from 6 to 9. Also, local jazz tonight at the Top Dog Coney Island. It's
vocalist
Emma Abu Kazem is performing with the Rich Michaels Trio. Mm-hmm. And just to say, and 1 week in advance, for Kate Patterson will be performing the last Friday of the year at the Top Dog.
Yep, that's a nice little venue. And, of course, Detroit Metro Times, too, a lot of, because it is an entertainment paper, so a lot of special dining and entertainment news in the current issue from this Wednesday all over town. We thank all the papers for allowing us to state their stories on the air. We do plug them all and try to support them all, or they won't be there in the future. And it doesn't take much to support the Metro Times or the Arab American News.
No.
Be